Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Drafted, Proxy War, by Adam Sampson, narrated by Derek Scholes. Chapter 1. They say you could sometimes smell the alien dust on the tribute trains, but only right after the train arrived at the station. The rumor was that the smell would let you know this would be a tribute train, so you could choose a different one. This really wasn't true, but it didn't stop Peter Gray from arriving early anyway. He sat down on a wooden bench to wait for the Amtrak passenger train that wasn't due to arrive for another 15 minutes. He was mostly practical, but allowed himself this one superstition. The train station was the largest one in Lubbock, Texas, but it still wasn't that large. Other towns had invested more in their train stations as airports grew obsolete, but Lubbock was a bit behind the times. This platform would soon fill up with passengers, but for now, it was sparsely populated. Few people sat on wooden benches strung along the platform. Footsteps of travelers echoed off the metal ceiling, making it sound busier than it was. Peter nestled his small suitcase between his legs as he sat and stared off into space at something only he could see. Most free moments were spent working on his proposal for work, using his smart glasses to tweak and improve the presentation. This was his first major presentation overseas. Up until now, he had been a junior salesman at his company. This was his first chance to show his boss he could shine. Although Peter looked overdressed for the afternoon train station crowd, he would fit right in when he got to the meeting in a few hours. He had just bought a new business suit, and he hoped it would be worth it. Peter has short brown hair, light brown skin, and a physique that showed both his regular exercise regime and his love for pizza. He looked at himself in the mirror this morning and thought he looked rather handsome. Most of his friends disagreed. They said he was slightly handsome at best, not ugly at worst. He had to admit, though, it was his work ethic that got him this job, not his looks. A gentle chime sounded in his ear. He tapped his glasses to answer the phone and said, "Hi, Mom."
"You shouldn't go to Germany," his mom said.
"Fine, thanks. And how are you?" Peter replied. This non-sequitur threw Peter's mom off for a moment while she processed what he had said. After a moment, she said,
"I just don't like it when you travel so far. It is dangerous," Mom said.
"It really isn't, though, Mom," Peter sighed and then continued. "Portal trains are safer than cars. You know this. I've told you 100 times.
"But what if the aliens get you? I would never forgive myself for letting you go," she replied.
Peter knew what she was talking about, why she didn't want him to take the train. Portal trains are one of the gifts the alien benefactors had bestowed upon the world. You loaded up on a standard train, and your train drove through a portal and ended up in a different country. Instantaneous travel almost completely replaced airplanes. But of course, portal trains had a disadvantage that airplanes did not. The troll-like aliens demanded a tax for their generosity. After all, technology, healing, and portals did not come free. Every so often at random, about once a month, a train full of people would be drafted into their war as tribute, and an empty train would be delivered at its destination. Unlucky train passengers fought a war for the trolls in exchange for all the wonders they gifted the human race. The aliens called themselves Vindalar, but everyone on Earth called them trolls, since they resembled the hulking brutes from fiction. The chances of being on a tribute train were still very small. Statistically speaking, you had a 1.5 million chance of being on a tribute train at some point in your life. People who did not want to be taken by aliens could still take an airplane. But planes are slow, and portals are instantaneous, so people still prefer to take a portal train. Car travel was still the more dangerous of the three travel methods. Even with modern medicine, you still had a 1 in 200 chance of dying in a car crash at some point in your life. Peter often told his mother this. Each time he traveled, in fact, but she still worried. Humans have a bad understanding of true risk. Peter wondered sometimes if the trolls were better at understanding probability, but he didn't know. Even after 12 years of their presence on Earth, he still knew very little about them. The aliens had contacted the Chinese first, assuming they were the leaders of the planet. They only talked to the Chinese government and didn't give out interviews. Peter's best guess is that tribute trains are probably why China opened up the gifts of the aliens to others, to lower the human cost to their own people. If it weren't for that human cost, perhaps the rest of the world would not have even known about the aliens. Knowing all this, Peter said the only thing that could end the conversation. "Mom, I promise if I ever get taken by aliens, I will get strong enough to come back home to you." A few years after the first tribute train, a few people started coming back home. They had done well in the Trolls' War and had earned the right to come back home. It was the hope of all those who had friends or family go missing on a tribute train. Thousands left every year, and a handful returned. The Trolls said that the others simply hadn't earned the right to return yet, but those few humans that returned hinted at a terrible survival rate.
"You had better come back to me. I just couldn't live with myself if I knew those evil aliens took you away from me,"
Mom replied. Peter bit back his reply. Those aliens were not evil. They were the only reason why she was still alive. She had inoperable brain cancer last year, cured by an alien serum. She just didn't like to be reminded of that fact. The last two times he brought it up, she yelled at him for more than an hour, claiming the serum could have killed her because the aliens might have spiked the serum. There were no facts to support this claim, but that did not stop her heartfelt beliefs. So, instead, he said,
"I am glad to have you too, Mom. It would break my heart if something took you away from me too."
This wasn't exactly true, but he knew it was what his mother wanted to hear. He was pretty sure he loved his mother, but he didn't really miss her much when he was out of the country. Perhaps the daily calls had something to do with that. Seeing the train pulling into the station, he said,
"I have got to go now, Mom. I love you. Call me when you get there, sweetikins," she said.
Peter winced at the childhood nickname. He could tell she was really mad at him. She knew he hated that name.
"Yeah, Mom. Of course, I will call you. I love you as much as you love me, but the train just rolled into the station and I need to hop on. Bye."
Peter hung up before she could answer. He knew she was just going to go on and on about the danger, and that conversation was easier to have when he had already made the trip. He loved being in a different country and asking his mother if she thought he shouldn't come home. Picking up his briefcase, Peter hopped aboard the train. Each train car had two levels with stairs on each end to travel between levels. Halfway up on each side, there was a small section with six seats, and Peter always wanted to sit there. It didn't feel as crowded to him as the larger sections of the main train car did. It always felt cozy, like a small reading nook in the library that no one visited. Peter particularly liked it when the train didn't fill up all the way, and he had the section to himself. The train was idle for 5 minutes before Peter realized he wasn't going to get the section to himself. A large man in a tan trench coat sat kitty-cornered him, grunting as he sat down. He was large in a way that refrigerators are large, ungainly in movement, but fading into the background when not. He tucked his thin briefcase between his legs and removed his black hat and placed it on his lap. With the hat off, Peter could see that the fridge man was balding, but his hair was close-cropped. Peter saw a long scar below his left ear before he looked away, not wanting to get caught staring. He didn't stare at men that large without consequences. For all Peter knew, this man could be a kindergarten teacher, but he would certainly guess mafia enforcer first. He would fit well in the background of a mob movie, or perhaps a henchman in a James Bond movie. They were the only ones in this section for a while, and Peter started to hope this train would not fill up. Portal trains didn't really take long, but Peter didn't like being squished between strangers. As people walked by him and continued up to the second level, he would cheer silently. Peter was a good passenger, so he didn't spread out his stuff on the seat, but he still hoped that people would pass him by. A woman and her young son dashed his hopes as they stopped at his section. Peter scooched over to give them room. The mother sat near Peter, and the little boy on the far side, his small legs dangling off the edge of the seat. The new arrivals looked Asian, but Peter didn't have enough experience to accurately guess which country they were from. If pressed, he would guess that they were from Korea, based on their hair color. Their hair was black, exactly the same kind of black hair found in many Asian countries. He smiled when she talked to her son. He was pretty sure his guess was right, and they were speaking Korean. The mother had short black hair, looked to be in her late 30s, and had a round face that looked at her son kindly. Her son looked about 3 years old, black hair and a bowl cut. The cute little boy was looking around at the train in wonder, smiling and having the time of his life. Traditional etiquette on trains and all mass transit in America, Germany, and South Korea was to pretend that the other passengers on the train were not there. No touching, no eye contact, and certainly no talking to each other. A polite train trip was a silent one, with everyone pretending they were sitting in their own opaque pod and could not see anyone else. In blatant disregard to this rule, Peter leaned over slightly and smiled at the young boy. The boy can be forgiven for breaking etiquette rules and smiling back on account of his age, but his mother showed better manners and continued to ignore Peter. Next to join their small section was a tall, thin woman. She was much older than the rest of the passengers, but Peter suspected that when she was his age, she was a great beauty. Now, however, she had a pinched face and seemed dissatisfied in every way with the world around her. Since his section was full now, Peter bowed to societal pressure and stopped people watching. He tapped his glasses and started making the small hand movements needed to manipulate the sales presentation. His arms in his lap, he only moved his hands a few inches at a time to get the desired results. His smart glasses' slim design and groundbreaking interface combined to make a true modern marvel, but Peter hated it. He didn't actually need glasses. It was just for the screen. He hoped that after this sale in Germany, he would get enough commission to get a display implanted in his eyes. It would eliminate the need to move his hands since it tracked eye movement much better, and the resolution would be as crisp as his eyes could possibly detect. His father had died before smartphones had become old technology, and he would be amazed at all the advances the aliens had gifted the human race. But that didn't stop Peter from taking it all for granted only a few years later. 12 years was plenty of time for most of the human race to get used to the new normal, and Peter basically grew up with the new technology, only being 13 years old when they arrived. The train rocked forward gently as it started rolling forward. On a small electronic billboard above the passengers' heads displayed their destination, Dresden, Deutschland. Although still in America, the language for all signage had switched to German once the train started rolling. Once they left the train station, they picked up speed and came to the portal just outside the station. The portal was a large oval extending above and below with the train tracks disappearing into the bottom edge. Purple with silver lightning trickled around the outside edges, the center a shifting mass of light and dark blue. Although it seemed to cut the tracks in half, the portal was literally one-dimensional, so the landscape was unaffected by its presence. Peter saw none of this. He was focused on shutting down his glasses. He would need to start it up again once he arrived since nothing worked during a portal trip. There was usually 12 seconds of darkness, the length of time it took for the whole train to enter the portal, before they arrived at their destination. Inside the train there was light, but outside was pure, featureless black. It was like someone temporarily painted the windows with Vantablack paint and removed it when they arrived. The passengers should have known that something was off when it took 20 seconds for the light outside to return. But even the most seasoned traveler didn't notice something was off until they looked outside. The large man with a hat was the first in the train section to notice. He looked outside and said, "What's in the—" He paused in confusion and said, "That ain't right. That ain't right at all." Soon most of the passengers were looking out the window as the train slowed down and pulled into the station. It was obvious that they had not arrived at their intended destination. The Dresden train station was covered, but this station was open air. Instead of benches and signs, this station was basically a slab of concrete on either side of the tracks to facilitate deboarding. Seeing this, Peter said, more to himself than anything, "They must have misrouted the portal. They say that never happens, but there you go." He turned back and sat in his seat again as he said, "I hope they fix this soon." It was the general unease of his fellow passengers that made him look out the window again. This time, he saw the sky, a gray-red expanse with scattered pink clouds. The realization hit him like a punch to his heart. "Oh, shit! Mom is never going to forgive me." Chapter 2. He was going to die. This train had been chosen by the aliens as a tribute, and he was going to die in their war. What were they fighting for? He didn't want to die out in space. Or wherever this is, a planet of some kind, obviously. What planet had a red sky? He had no idea. The tall, thin woman stood up, started rocking back and forth on the same spot, and said, "Oh, nine. Oh, nine." Her eyes were wide with panic as she continued, "Das geht nicht. Ich werde spät sein. Das geht nicht. Ich kann nicht spät sein. Das geht nicht. Wir müssen zurückgehen. Ja, das mache ich. Ich werde einfach zurücklaufen."
Ich laufe einfach zurück.
Peter knew enough German to realize that the older woman was planning on just walking back through the portal. He leaned up against the window to see if he could see the portal. He couldn't because the train track was directly behind them. Seeing the older woman start for the exit, he followed her. They walked up to their exit right as the train came to a stop. They were one of the first few to exit the train. Most of the rest of the passengers were reeling with shock at their unexpected destination and not in a hurry to leave the train and walk into the unknown. A few passengers hadn't even realized that they weren't in Dresden as they tried in vain to get their electronics to connect to the internet again. The older woman turned towards the portal in the distance and started walking. Peter started to follow after her, only to see the portal close. He stopped, defeated. This was it. He was stuck here for the rest of his life, however long that ended up being. Looking around at the new world, he squinted a bit. For a world with reddish-gray-colored skies, it was certainly brighter than he would expect. There were tall mountains on either side of the train, far in the distance, but it was clear they were massive. In front of the train, where the concrete platforms ended, was a collection of vehicles. He turned towards the old woman to talk to her, but she had continued to walk towards the end of the train when he wasn't looking. Perhaps she hadn't seen the portal close.
Hey, das Portal ist geschlossen, he yelled at her.
He was reasonably sure that she would understand that the portal is closed, even though he couldn't remember the German word for portal. She half turned towards him as she kept walking.
Ich kann nicht warten. Ich bin schon spät, she said.
Then she turned around and started walking further away from the train. Peter was about to go after her, but at this point, more people started to exit the train and blocked his view of her. He almost ran after her anyway, but stopped himself. What would he do if he stopped her? What should they be doing now anyway? Belatedly, he thought about the quality of the air around him. How was he able to breathe on a different planet? The sky and ground obviously indicated the composition of the planet was vastly different than Earth. He took a deep breath, thinking about the air. It smelled clean. Not fresh, exactly, just devoid of any bad smells. It was a little dry. His second big breath left him a little bit lightheaded. Did that mean there was more oxygen in the air? He had no idea. About half the people had left the train by now, and although the concrete platform was starting to get crowded, it was mostly quiet. Most people looked around in fear, and few talked quietly among themselves. The heavy atmosphere was swallowing up the sound like London fog. Everyone was milling about, but the platform full of people had a muted quality. Like Peter, most people were looking about the train and trying to comprehend the landscape. When seeing something entirely new for the first time, the brain refuses to comprehend it at first. Although the pile of aquamarine rocks at the base of the train platform were distinctly septagonal, their minds refused to admit that there was anything but a blue blob there. At least until they stared at the rocks for a few moments, and the truth revealed itself. The rest of the landscape was mostly different shades of rock and dirt. The train station stood in a valley between two large mountains, with stripes of color blending into each other. The train station was built on the blue rock, but that must have been quarried and brought here since the dirt directly below it was a brick red. Farther from the train, the ground faded into a light blue, with a dusty purple boundary between them. The light blue stopped abruptly at the foothills of the mountains, rock slides of dusty vermilion shale acting as the boundary. Above the shale, there were splotches of blue that could be vegetation, but it was too far away to see. After a few moments, shapes emerged from the landscape, moving toward the train, three on each side. Just as the shapes resolved themselves into humanoids, a voice rang out across the landscape. The voice repeated a message a few times, but carried no meaning until the humanoids drew closer.
Ba su yu jing li fang zai huo qie xiang, ran huo dao huo qie jiang mian, qing shuang shuang huo qie jiang mian, ti gong di jiao tong gong zhu. Lassen Sie Ihr ganzes Gepäck im Zug und kommen Sie vor den Zug. Bitte laden Sie den bereitgestellten Transport vor dem Zug.
Leave all your luggage on the train and come to the front of the train. Please load onto the provided transportation at the front of the train.
There was a pause, and then the recording repeated itself. At this point, the humanoids were close enough to the train to see that they were indeed humans, Chinese soldiers in uniform. They began waving the crowd towards the vehicles and saying, "Chang Qianzhou," over and over again. Peter was looking bewildered as the soldiers kept waving the crowd forward, stuck as the people slowly moved around him towards the vehicles. The Korean woman from his section of the train touched his arm lightly.
"They are saying we must move this way. Come," she said.
She waved him on and joined the crowds. The noise level seemed to pick up, the crowds growing louder as they started moving. Without another word, Peter turned and followed her. If he was going to die on this alien world, did it matter where he ended up? As they got to the vehicles, Peter saw that the vehicles were not trucks, but alien transports. They hovered gently over the landscape, keening slightly with a quiet scream just on the edge of his hearing. There was a silver-covered cab, pentagonal with windows on all sides. It looked like it was made of metal scales, small, five-sided scales tightly overlapping and sharp. Behind the cab was a trailer, a floating flatbed that had rows of basic chairs secured to the frame. The flatbed looked like it was constructed of the same small scales, but the chairs were typical metal chairs from Earth. As he got there, there was a line of people being loaded up onto the back of the flatbeds. There were six vehicles, five with long flatbeds and one shorter and covered. As they waited, they saw the occasional child being led alone to the smaller covered vehicle. Peter frowned. Separating families was never a good sign. As they got to the front of the line, a smaller Chinese female soldier was directing traffic, telling groups of people to go to one of the five flatbeds. Occasionally, there was a young child, and she spoke to the parents for a moment, and they willingly sent their children to the smaller covered vehicle. When the Korean woman from his section got to the front of the line, she tightened her grip on her son's hand. The female soldier held up her hand and leaned in to talk to the Korean mother. She whispered something into her ear, evidently something shocking because she tensed up and seemed about to cry. She then turned to her son and spoke to him, her voice cracking. The young boy looked hurt and sad, but with a word from the Chinese soldier, he walked by himself to the covered vehicle. Peter found himself quickly loaded onto the final flatbed, on a seat next to the Korean woman. He looked around himself and saw the flatbed slowly being filled up. He guessed that the bed could fit about 150 people. Most had a dazed look on their faces. Only a few were angry. Peter turned to his neighbor and asked her, "Why did you let your son be taken like that?" After he said it, he realized how harsh and accusatory it sounded. Immediately he wished he could take his words back. It wasn't the first time he let his words get ahead of his thoughts and regretted it. The Korean woman turned to stare him in the eyes for a long moment before she said,
"She told me the truth. Most of us will not survive the day, but the children will be sent back to Earth."
She turned back away as she said,
"It was his only chance."
"I am so very sorry. I can't even... I am so sorry," Peter said.
She didn't look back and stared resolutely into the distance. It hadn't been more than a few minutes since he found out he was probably going to die soon, but now he felt much worse because of this awkward situation. He looked to his left to see who was sitting next to him on his other side, anything to avoid this terrible feeling. His neighbor was a young man, about his age, grungy clothes and heavy hiking boots. Peter guessed the man had been planning on backpacking across Europe before his plans were changed for him. He was taller than Peter and had long flowing blonde hair and pale white skin. He could pass as a native for several Scandinavian countries, so perhaps he was returning home from hiking across the U.S. The hiker was currently staring intently behind him. In fact, most of the people sitting near Peter were staring behind him, so Peter turned back as well. They were staring at a figure far away from them near the end of the train. It was the first alien any of them had seen in person. The pictures hadn't done them justice. The Vindolar really did look a lot like the stereotypical fantasy troll, or perhaps an orc from Lord of the Rings. Peter knew that everyone called them trolls because of their ugly visage, quick regeneration, and aversion to fire, just like the trolls in fiction. They were much taller than he had guessed from seeing them online. The alien had a head, two legs, and two arms, like most alien life that humans knew about. About 9 feet tall, with green pebbly skin and disproportionately large hands. The alien was ape-like, thickly built with arms longer than its legs. As it walked forward, Peter could see powerful legs ending in hoof-like feet. The troll's torso and upper legs were covered in a black outfit that sparkled slightly as it caught the light. Perhaps the main thing that didn't match fiction was its head. Instead of a stupid-looking face with an ugly nose, this troll had an intelligent-looking visage, a small nose, and almost no neck. The sharp, angular head just jutted forward from its torso, its eyes only slightly higher than its shoulders. This particular troll was slowly walking from the back of the train to the front. The troll was peering into the train, and every so often he would stop and raise his hand, and a quick light would flash into the train, followed by a small puff of smoke from inside the train. Every so often, the troll would stop. His hand would go up, and a light would flash into the train, and he would move forward again. Peter noticed that with every flash that went off, the Chinese guards would flinch. The Korean woman had turned around by now and was watching the troll with everyone else. She said,
"What is it doing?"
Peter's hiker neighbor said,
"I think a few people tried to stay behind on the train and hide."
Shit.
Yeah.
Before long, the alien troll reached the group of vehicles and said something to the soldiers. His voice, Peter assumed it was a he, was low and gravelly and grated on the edge of his nerves. Peter didn't understand the voice, but evidently the soldiers did. They all loaded up into the cab of a vehicle, with the troll in the front vehicle. The vehicle with the children took off first, turning around and traveling back along the train tracks. A portal opened up right before it got there, casting a blue light across the landscape, closing right after the transport went through. The Korean woman next to him sighed in relief and said something to herself in Korean. At that moment, the vehicle sprang into motion. All in a line like a caravan, they spread across the dirt, floating about 5 feet up. They accelerated like a race car trying to beat a record and kept accelerating. Wind began whipping by them all and pushed them into their seats. Before long, they were going so fast that it was getting hard to breathe. The wind was going by so fast that the pressure differential made it difficult to take a breath. Peter just closed his eyes and held on, just trying to survive the trip. He was genuinely scared for his life, and he realized that he was not ready to lose it yet. He tried praying, but could only think of the word please, repeating please to himself over and over again. After an eternity had passed, but before anyone had passed out, they arrived at their destination. Peter sat forward with his head in his hands, breathing hard. Several long moments later, he looked around to see where they had ended up. It looked much like where they had just left, a desolate valley surrounded by mountains on all sides. There was some blue vegetation at the base of the mountains, but it was too far away to see any details. There were 50 or so mounds of dirt that the flatbed circled. The valley was dusty red dirt, the mounds of dirt made from dark red chunks of earth piled into a small hill. They looked like ant hills for giants, a cone of dirt with an opening in the center. The guards got out and stared at the mounds of dirt, ignoring the passengers. Everyone sat in their seats looking around, wondering what they were doing here. A few people jumped off the end of the flatbed and stretched. Peter stood and thought about joining them, the open-air transport feeling claustrophobic for some reason. Before he could get far, though, he heard a sound and glanced around to see what it was. A screen had appeared in the air above each of the transports, angled so those sitting could see what was displayed. It was projected into the air from the cab, slightly transparent, but solid enough that he could easily see what was displayed there. It was a symbol of the Chinese army, a red star with a Chinese character in the middle. There was also soft music playing. Peter sat back down. The star soon faded and a cartoon was displayed, a view of the planet they were on, zooming in to a representation of where they were at now. 5 transports surrounding a set of mounds in the middle. A voice was narrating the cartoon, but it was in Chinese, so Peter ignored it. It zoomed in further to a single transport and a row of people sitting on chairs in the back, all of them wearing Chinese uniforms. Despite the serious subject matter, the cartoon style was cutesy, big heads and nubs for hands. All of the cartoon people looked at the screen and said something altogether. As it panned across them all, the narration continued.
"What are they saying?" Peter said and turned to his neighbor to his left.
The man shrugged and looked back at the screen.
"Are we supposed to understand this?
Peter continued. The program had obviously been developed during...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?